You are listening to the one and only Visionaries Wrestling Network, envisioning excellence and providing your perfect podcast experience.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Five Rounds Podcast, the only podcast out there with the cardio for those deep water championship rounds. I am Max, and with me today is my son, Carlos. Carlos, how are you?
Oh, I'm not too bad. How are yourself?
Yeah, just enjoying the last of the good weather before the rain comes next week. I had a quality barbecue done by your good self, some quality grub there.
Oh, proper American cooking.
Yeah, so today, obviously still no UFC events, but I wanted to do something that I've covered a couple of times whilst you've not been available. It's called This Happened in the UFC. Basically, I'm going over some of like the main news stories that have happened within the UFC in the past week or so. And this week, obviously, there's been quite a few, really. The first one I wanted to touch on started pretty much... Well, it actually links to ones we've covered in other episodes, but the actual story came up on the 20th, which is like Monday. Obviously, Dana wanted to have the 249, and that got cancelled because of the pressure with the governor of New York or the governor of Nevada, whoever. And then he wanted to have Fight Island, which obviously this hasn't come off yet. And he also wanted to fight on... Indian burial ground or something along those lines, like Indian ground in California. None of the ideas kind of
panned out. He sort of wanted to go everywhere, weren't he? Like Florida, like said no, like kicked him out. Every time he like asked ESPN and all that, they sort of kicked him out. He just don't want to take no for an answer, doesn't he?
Yeah, and that's what I was kind of linking at. It was like this kind of petulant child who basically, because he couldn't have his toys, wanted to play with me even more. And I've felt for at least the last few weeks he's kind of put his fighters at risk because of this, because he's almost creating like a petri dish where these fighters can get infected and they're like basically all trapped on this fight island or in this Indian ground. But the news I wanted to touch on actually relates that he's obviously been shot down with all his attempts to have these shows, but he's then pushing ahead with having UFC 249 on May the 9th, even though we still have no idea when this pandemic is going to kind of like back off and we can have these shows. But he still has to be the one who's pushing for the first show back, and it's this kind of like the rules don't apply to me syndrome that he has, a lot like Vince McMahon, really. But my issue was that he was putting the fighters at risk, and now we've got fighters who are coming out and kind of standing up to him, which is what I kind of want to touch on here. At the beginning of the week, we had Amanda Nunes, who we slated to defend a featherweight title at this event, 249 on May the 9th. In a kind of a massive triple threat main event with three titles on the line, and she's quite said, I am not agreed to that. I will not be fighting on the May the 9th. I don't think the time is right for this fight. I think we should let this coronavirus pass a little bit, and then we can all have at least a full camp. Maybe around June, we'll see. But I'm definitely not going to be fighting on May the 9th. So it's good to see a fighter kind of like standing up to like this big authority of Dana White, because that's been a lot of the problems, especially with the fighters. They kind of been almost bullied into appearing on these fights, but then obviously you get the fighter mentality where they sometimes are like fucking as thick as two short planks, and they kind of thrive off that fighter's mentality.
Oh yeah,
we've seen it with Conor McGregor, who's kind of like calling people like Habib a pussy for not wanting to fight. But yeah, he's willing to risk like his own health. But this guy actually got hammered down a little bit more later in the week by Justin Gaethje. Justin Gaethje, obviously, you'll know, is involved in this interim title fight against Tony Ferguson, which was also meant to be on this May the 9th. And whilst he hasn't come out and said he's not fighting, he's actually come out and said he's getting a bit pissed off with the fact that Dana's booking these short kind of quick turnover fights. He says he's always will be the person who will volunteer to fill in for when someone's injured. He said that's never been the problem. But this card is being built so quickly. I mean, we're talking less than 2 weeks away from it actually happening, and the card is still being built. He said that he has a kind of issue with, he's not having that opportunity to have a full camp, and especially with this virus going around. So yeah, I just wanted to kind of touch on that. What are your thoughts on Dana's kind of bullish actions in wanting to put on a show on as soon as possible and kind of railroading the fighters into doing it?
I fully understand where he's coming from, as well as Vince McMahon and all the other sort of top dogs out there who just want to keep the money coming in, just the overturn, so they can pay the staff, pay the wages, and still make a profit, and at the end of the day, still have the business as successful as it is after this virus has passed, before it actually came. But then again, he's being so selfish and foolishness to even keep pressuring his fighters, not only to fight on these cards, but to keep saying to the public, oh, he's putting this card on, or I'm trying for here. Just, I don't know why he doesn't take the back step, just have a chill out, mm-hmm. just let the virus go, yeah. Because he's, and I can imagine he's under a lot of stress as well, with trying to get all this lot sorted out and that lot sorted out. The UFC has made a lot of money now. They're not gonna, this virus is not gonna, it's not gonna affect them long time period. You know, they're gonna bounce back the same like WWE and stuff like that. They are the biggest organization in mixed martial arts to this day. So as soon as they open their doors again, their cards are gonna be bigger than ever. Now, look at that card, what he was on about on the main of the half. Look at how stacked that card is. You've got,
well, how stacked it was. Now there's a title match took off it, but getting into that, a couple of days later, after the Nunes said she weren't fighting, he doubled down again. It's like he's almost trying to go bigger and bigger every time. It's now not just a main ninth event, it's now a three events in the space of like 6 days. There's like the main ninth event, which is 249, and then he's going to be having two events in Florida on the May the 13th and May the 16th. So there's going to be 30 fights in the space of 8 days with, I mean, I give wrestling a lot of shit for still like producing shows, but at least the kind of like health risks are to a minimum because it's scripted fighting. This is people punching the living shit out of
each other.
You're going to get injuries, you're going to get concussions, you're going to get bleeding, and that just increases the risk of getting it. You're going to get people sweating and getting out of breath, and it only takes one person in that whole group to have the disease, not even have symptoms of it, as we've seen with famous people over here in Britain, like Kenny Dalglish, didn't have the symptoms of it, but has got coronavirus. It only takes that one person to have it, and then you've infected 60 fighters just for the sake of you wanting to be the first person to come out of the blocks and have a show.
Oh yeah, definitely. And to put it in that perspective, I'd put money on it now that obviously the wrestling shows, it is scripted, but I guarantee that wrestling still makes a lot more revenue than what mixed martial arts and UFC does. So they can still afford to put them sort of shows on and sort of pay for the pay for the health structure of the event and stuff like that. Make sure all the athletes who are there, like the wrestlers and that lot, are getting tested. Making sure everyone's safe. Whereas, like you were on about, in the real fighting world, you can't predict that. You can't script that stuff. You don't know what's going to happen at the end of the day. You don't know what the outcome's going to be. You've just got to watch and wait and see. But going back to actually throwing the card for the fighters, for someone to stand up for the fighters. Got to give it to Amanda Nunes for basically coming out and saying no. Now she
and Gaethje as well.
Oh yeah, well, more Nunes than Gaethje. It's brilliant that Gaethje stood up, because there's other fighters that have stood up as well, but more Nunes than anything, because she has got, out of anyone, out of all them lot, fair enough, Gaethje, if he were to say no and then he got pissed off, he's not getting this title shot. Mm-hmm. So what? Nunes has got more to lose, but she's got two titles.
She's also got more stroke.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. She is a number one cash cow for women's fighting. She's beat Ronda, she's beat Holly Holm, she's beat Misha. She's beat
and she's also a
Cyborg, and she's a double champ. So she's got more leeway, if you will, than these other fighters to basically say, Dana, no, I'm not doing this, because I know that even if you do get pissed off at me, you're not going to like cut me from this organisation, because as soon as you do, Bellator 1, they're going to offer me a fucking stupid amount of money to fight over there, and I'm going to do it, and then eventually you're going to get me to come back anyway, because you're going to need me, because your women's divisions are dead. So it's you've got to respect her for that point of view, but Dana needs to just take a step back and just let this shit blow over before he keeps on risking the health of his fighters.
Yeah, and it goes to show that if that was a normal person, then you're one of your biggest stars comes out and says, no, I'm not, this is concerning. And like I said, not only are you've got like past stars like Jose Aldo saying, no, this is concerning, I'm not willing to fight. You've got potential world champions in Justin Gaethje saying, no, I'm concerned.
Just imagine though, what do you reckon his reaction would be though if McGregor said that? If McGregor were backing all these fighters and saying it's a bad idea, what do you reckon he'd say then?
Well, exactly. And but it kind of shows the mentality that he has, that he's heard these issues, and instead of like opening his eyes and kind of like realizing his concerning his staff, he's doubled down and put on three shows on the same thing. It's almost like he doesn't care what they think is going to happen, whether or not. But we'll see if that goal it still comes off, because there's still the potential that they might end up still getting stopped anyway. Another story I wanted to talk with you about is Henry Cejudo accepted another fight this week. Obviously, he was going to face Jose Aldo for the bantamweight title, and there was a lot of controversy about him kind of hand-picking Jose Aldo as his opponent, because Jose Aldo's only ever fought once at bantamweight and got his ass absolutely handed to him, and yet there's fighters waiting in the wings, like good, hard, hungry fighters, guys like Aljamain Sterling and Corey Sandhagen, and even guys like Petr Yan, who have worked their arse off in that division to get that shot. And instead of going with any of them as a replacement for Jose Aldo, he's gone with Dominic Cruz. Now, we know Dominic Cruz is an absolute legend in that division, and probably the biggest name in bantamweight fighting. I understand that, but the guy hasn't fought for 2 years, and he also lost his last fight.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on this? Is this Cejudo trying to make legacy fights, trying to give himself a kind of like notches on his post, or is this him ducking potential upsets and potential banana skin fights?
Well, I think both of them. You're right on both of what you, both of the things you're saying. Because you are right. He is handpicking his opponents. Where it was Aldo, fair enough. Aldo is fight at bantamweight. It were an all right fight. Yeah, he didn't win the fight, but I don't think he should have got a title shot off it. Now you understand why he got a title shot off it, through his name value and what he did at featherweight. Same reason to why everyone knows why Dominic Cruz has got the title shot, because of the name value. And what a lot of fighters this day and age are sort of getting pissed off at are the likes of Dominic Cruz getting these shots now just off the name value and not off fighting. Now, if Dominic Cruz had a warm up fight and got a shot after that, no one could have complained. But I agree with Volkanovski, the featherweight champion, on this. When he came out, I think it was last week, where he basically said he's looking like you're basically scared to fight. You rank one or two opponents, and I think it is. I think he's scared to fight that top caliber opponent and lose that belt that he's worked so hard for. And no one can take it away from him. He has worked hard for that belt, and then the legacy fight, he's already beat Demetrius. Cejudo's already beat Demetrius, he's already beat TJ Dillashaw. Yeah. Now if he were to beat Aldo and Dominic Cruz, that's how can no one say he's not the best 135, 100 best 25 pounder in the world, because he's already, he would have beat the four main people there, where it's Demetrius Johnson and Dominic Cruz. Now if he beats them two, especially Jose Aldo, if he were to beat him, that's everyone who were basically med 135 and 125, what it is. Like this, they've been in that division for the last 10 years.
But then if you look at the welterweight, how many people have now got wins over Anderson Silva?
At middleweight.
At middleweight, yeah. How many people have got wins over Anderson Silva? Beating someone like Dominic Cruz now, or someone like Jose Aldo now, is not like beating him 6 years ago when they were in the prime.
No, definitely.
So I don't think it, whilst it looks good on paper that you beat this person who was arguably the best at that time, but you're ducking fighters who were potentially better than them, because everyone knows that MMA has grown as a sport over that time, and the fighters now are infinitely more talented than the ones that came before.
They evolve every day. The MMA moves so fast because it's so new. It's only what, 30-year-old like mainstream, like 30-year-old like, that's a lot of people like start of, well, especially in the last 15 to 20 years in Europe, it started getting big. So in, obviously with wrestling and other sports and that, like, you might see a player or an athlete do something and you go, oh, that's cool, I've seen that happen before. In this sport, you've got chance to do something completely new because it's so fresh on people's minds. You can, there's Raymond Daniels, he's a Bellator fighter. He did, in one of his bouts about 2 years ago, he spun round about three times, he used to crack someone in the chin. And that's new. So that instantly made him like sort of YouTube, Facebook, Instagram famous just off that one move, because no one's seen that sort of stuff before, and you can do new stuff. So MMA is always evolving to be the best, to beat the best. And Emre Cejudo is not doing that. He's looking to just get on paper, yeah, I beat Demetrius Johnson, I beat Dominic Cruz. But that's on paper, and that's not going to make you a millionaire. That's just going to go, yeah, he beat them. But when did you beat them? Like you were on about, he didn't beat them
in
6 years ago. No, it would have. It'd be more. Especially to me, it'd be more impressive to me if he were to defend that belt against Sterling, against Petr, beat the top guys who were in, who are technically
clean out the division.
In the prime,
clean out the division,
and
then
be the best at that time.
I'm going for. Legacy fights,
yeah.
like Bones, for instance. He's cleaned out his division. He could be well within his rights to say, right, I want to go for shots at heavyweight.
Definitely.
Because that's, I've already established myself as the very best in this division. Henry Cejudo hasn't done that. He's won that title and he's done nothing with it.
See,
and these are all these people going underneath him who've picked up victory after victory, and not just any old victory, just like really decisive victories, and it's kind of like bottleneck because Henry Cejudo is being allowed to handpick veterans for titles.
See, that's it, and a lot of people, especially in this day and age. Now, obviously, with my trainer Alan's. He won't mind me saying this because he'll say it himself. He's an older chap. He's been around on the MMA scene for over 60 years. Now, a lot of people in this day and age think that they need to beat guys like Dominic Cruz, Demetrius Johnson to portray that they're the best. But at the end of the day, when you, as a guy like Henry Cejudo, when you come into the sport at that era, you need to beat the guys at that era to prove that you're the best. That doesn't matter, because you come in younger and you beat the guy from the era before you who were the best. You don't hear people coming in saying, oh, I want to fight the Tito Ortiz, I want to fight Chuck Liddell, or I want to fight Randy Couture, all these legends and that lot. You hear them saying, I want to fight these, because they're big names, and they go, oh, look at he beat him, Dominic Cruz. Yeah, but Dominic Cruz is 35.
It's MMA match.
Yeah, Dominic Cruz is 35. He's been fighting professionally for the last, 20 years? So he needs to fight people. Same with all these other fighters who are looking like, I know Stylebender, for instance, he only fought Anderson Silva for the belt. But at the end of the day, if he would have fought a proper contender to face that belt, maybe he would have had a lot more people saying he were more deserving of that belt rather than people going, he got the gift of that title shot because he fought an out-of-date Anderson Silva when he could have fought and
well, to be fair though, he did also beat Calvin Gastelum.
Yeah, I know, but that was for the title on, but that was
to get his title shot.
But to even
But it would be like Gastelum, it would be like Adesanya ducking all the fighters in his division, which he isn't really technically doing, because he's fought a lot of those contenders already. It would be like him going and saying, "Oh well, I now want to go and fight Luke Rockhold, and I want to go and fight Michael Bisping." The people who are kind of past the prime, out of the game, and he wants to just have that name on his belt. That's what Henry Cejudo. That's what it seems like he's doing to me.
See, that's exactly what it sounds like it is doing, isn't it? He's handpicking his opponents, but he's doing it, as in, like, we'll use that, the Mayweather term. He's handpicking his opponents where his style now will beat his opponent. Mm-hmm. Not 5 years ago or all like that, just his style now, he's going to beat his opponent.
Yeah. This story came out a couple of days ago. We mentioned about Dana White wanting this 3-fight extravaganza at the beginning of May, and he's already signed up a couple of fights from pretty interesting one. Anthony Smith wanting to be the first person to tap out Glover Teixeira, which I think is a great fight at the top of that light heavyweight division. But another one what's more interesting is Ovince St. Pierre is fighting. But he's not fighting at light heavyweight, he's actually jumping up to heavyweight to face Ben Rothwell. He's not young, he's 37 years old. He didn't kind of reach the hearts of the light heavyweight division that he...
The heart train that he was expecting.
Yeah, that he was meant to, especially after coming in from Bellator. How do you think he goes at heavyweight? I mean, taking on Ben Rothwell. Ben Rothwell's a big, beefy fucker. It's going to be a hard fight for someone to take on, but he has got that quality wrestling skill, especially with that Von Flucho. Do you think he fares any better at heavyweight than he does at light heavyweight?
You see, I reckon he could... He's got to watch out for the power, definitely. For the one, he's got to watch out... Because even though it's light heavyweight and heavyweight... Heavyweight still hit that little bit harder.
That would be a shock.
But the other, definitely. If he gets hit with a proper shot like that, the best thing he could have been doing is taking heavy shots like that in training. So if Ben Rothwell were to land a massive shot on his chin, his body knows that he could take it already. So even if he were to take it, not a problem. He can scramble, do everything he needs to get back to a safe zone. But like you were saying, he's got that quality wrestling and that Von Flucho that's been dangerous throughout his career. Now the one thing he's got, what a lot of people haven't got in that division, is time in there with one of the best fighters in the world. He has got a full 5 minute round. He went with Bones, weren't it? Mm-hmm. He went the distance with Bones.
It was when Bones first come back, and Bones looked very, very lackluster.
It looked lackluster, but it was still in there with John Bones Jones, and he still was throwing punches and still did stuff in that fight that he did usually. Fair enough, it weren't as technically smooth and sound as what it is now. But he's had time in there with some of the greats and people who have not only fought at light heavyweight, but he's been in there with people who fought at heavyweight, people who fought at middleweight, and they've jumped up, and that's the perfect level for him to go, right, I am ready for the heavyweights now, because I've fought more times in the light heavyweight division where I'm confident enough that I've got my experience to know that I can out-wrestle some of these big guys. Because what a lot of people as well have got to remember, when you're cutting weight, obviously they cut weight to 205. Mm-hmm. So obviously then when you rehydrate, you might weigh near enough what a heavyweight weighs in first place. So I think he'll do better in the heavyweight division than he did at light heavyweight, mainly just because they're a bit slower. And the gas. Now that's one thing he's got going for him. If he's got
massive cardio.
Yeah, if he can sort of, even though he can't, if you're just doing a stand and bang, you'll you'll knock him out, especially at heavyweight. But the one thing he's got good scrambling technique, he's got good clinch work, and he's got good groundwork. And when he's in top position and he's got you held down, and he knows where to go and what to do to get you into that Von Vlue choke, especially with people like Ben Rothwell who are just known for heavy hitting.
Yeah. If he can avoid getting knocked out and can use his quality wrestling. I mean, there is some wrestling in the heavyweight, but it is predominantly known as a kind of like almost like a boxing like division where it's all about the standing and banging, and it can kind of bring that flair. It's whether he can do that against like higher level opponents.
See,
against Ben Rothwell, against maybe someone like Cyril Gagne, it might work, but you get to the likes of Ngannou, Overeem, DC, Stipe, all who are very well rounded as MMA fighters, I think he will quickly find he's still got a ceiling that he just can't get above.
That's one thing I was about to say about him. Like, even though I think he'll do better at heavyweight than he did at light heavyweight, I still don't think he wrecks the top five. I don't think he ever gets a title shot, because like you were on about, in the heavyweight, they're known for knocking people out, but you're still doing mixed martial arts, so you've got to go in there and have some sort of takedown defence if you want to keep that fight standing. Because if you go in there with no wrestling defence or takedown defence, anything like that, just boxing, you're going to get tucked down straight away. So, like you say, with people like DC, Stipe, Ngannou, these people have had to, they want to knock you out, so they don't want to go down to the ground.
I mean, even if you look at someone like Rosenstruik, not known for his wrestling skills, but he knows how to defend rudimentary wrestling takedowns, but he also, if he lands a punch on you, you're going to sleep.
Well,
and he's done that to heavyweights. So
yeah.
Someone who's coming up from heavyweight, they're going to take that punch and it's going to be like getting it like it with a train.
Well, that's it. Well, Ngannou, he did exactly the same thing to Curtis Blaydes. Curtis Blaydes is a prenowned wrestler. Now, Francis Ngannou is relatively new to MMA, and he had the experience and the knowledge to defend Curtis Blaydes' takedowns.
Yes, I mean, I remember that match. I remember that very, very clear. We all thought that Ngannou was going to be the typical let's bang people out, and he was left, right, and centre. And then when you saw that he had wrestling skills, that were like, whoa, this guy's elite. Yeah, this guy's elite. And I think that's where OSP's size might become like a disadvantage to him. But good luck to him. I've always enjoyed him watching him fight, so let's see what he can bring to the heavyweight division. The last story I want to touch on was from yesterday. And it concerns someone who retired recently, Jimmy Manua. Obviously retired after four straight losses. I think his last loss was to Alexander Rakic last year, and he retired in the middle of the octagon. And as we know with fighters, that retirement don't last long. We've seen it with Gustafsson, who's itching to kind of come back. Stefan Struve retired a couple of times, and both times he's come back. And Manua has said he wants to come back. He said he's got the itch to fight. He said he'd never lost that love for fighting. He just felt like he did it in the heat of the moment. But he's actually called out someone, and the reason why he's called them out is because he feels that they're in the same kind of boat. And he's called out Luke Rockhold. Rockhold this week has also come out and said he's itching to fight again. And Jimmy has said that Luke's an amazing fighter, former champion in Strikeforce and UFC. We both have that itch to fight. We both retired. Let's come back and fight each other. What do you think about that fight?
See, if you don't know that Luke Rockhold, this is to people who, if you don't know that Luke Rockhold's a legend in the sport, you shouldn't be watching it, because he literally is a legend. He's been in there with some of the greats. He's beat and lost to some of the greats, and he's had the titles that he needed. He had the Strikeforce title. He had the UFC title. And now he's making fucking a shit ton of money doing his modelling. Luke does not need to fight. He's a pretty boy who were good at fighting once. At the end of the day, there's a lot of people who are still young but past the prime, and it is still possible when you get when you get cracked so many times, your chin just can't hold up. And now, that's not his fault. He's not a shit fighter for that. It's just, that's the way the human body works. Once you get so many cracks of the chin and... Chuck Liddell, you can be as good as you want.
Once, got a glass jaw.
Yeah, once you get hit so many times, you're just gone. So he does not need to come back. I love Luke Rockhold, to be honest with you. I love him as a fighter, but I would not want to see him back in there, in the octagon. He's making too much money. Well, I don't know if he's making too much money, but I know he's making money doing his modelling. And like I say, he does not. He was a good fighter in his time.
It's the itch of the fight, though, isn't it?
I can understand him wanting to come back. Same with a lot of others, but he needs to fight that urge and just keep with his. He's modelling, but going on to the Jimmy Manua and Gustafsson, I knew it were only going to be a matter of time before them two said they basically were wanted to come back and fight, because Gustafsson and Jimmy Manua, that's all they know is fighting. It's not like them two have got anything else. They've got the gyms, they've got the training, they've got the students, but that's still fighting. Once you're around fighting 24/7. You still get that itch to come back and fight. But to be honest with you, I was more surprised that both of them two came back out and said that they wanted to come back into mixed martial arts. And I was quite expecting more Jimmy Manua, more than not, to basically want to come back and have a boxing match obviously because Joshua Fury want to fight. And he is a big name in England, is Jimmy Manua. And I thought, he has been a boxer before, and I thought it's a bit more or less punishment in some people's eyes to come back and do boxing. But Gustafsson, if he were to come back to the UFC, see, that's it. That OSP just reminds me so much of him. They both like that caliber of fighter. They've been in there with the greats, but they've lost to him. But saying that, if how much of a good thing would it be? Because obviously Gustafsson is known for his boxing. And now if he were to come back, I know Dylan White has been posting on Twitter loads of shit about UFC and about coming to do an MMA bout. And he posted a clip the other day about him knocking this guy out clean. And I couldn't manage to find the video, but I saw a picture of it. And the guy just looked just chubby and old. It just looked like one of them shit bouts that you go to like an old country village, yeah. You do it, you go, right, I'm champion. So I hit, sit down. But to be honest with you, if he were to give it a try, I'd love to see Gustafsson actually have sort of a MMA boxing bout with Dylan White, to be honest with you.
Yeah, it's an interesting time in MMA, that's for sure. I think a lot of people have seen like the kind of blueprint Conor has put out, and they just, they see the money and realise that there's a market for that. Right, I wanted to close out the show with a little bit of a test for you. This week, a website called thestreet.com published the top 20 highest ever paid UFC fighters. Now, this goes off what they received as their fight purse, not anything that they received as bonuses or anything that they received from sponsorship. So it's literally what these have been paid from the UFC from their fight purses. Right. So I want to see how many of the top 20 you can actually name. And I think I'll give you 5 wrong answers and we'll just see how many you can actually pull off.
Well, I'll go straight with top 5 of our thing, just to start it off, get the hardest ones out of the way. McGregor's got to be first.
McGregor's number one. He's been paid $7.35 million.
Next has got to be either...
Well, just say one.
I'll say one then, but it's, I'm going to go with, just because of how long, I'm going to go with John Jones.
John Jones is 11th with $3.94 million.
Right, so if he's... Jesus, then.
Could that be George St. Pierre second?
George St. Pierre is third with 5.4 million.
I'm going to say Donald Cerrone at second then.
Donald Cerrone is sixth with 4.74 million.
Right. So, I'm going to go.
There's some surprise. I'll tell you now, there's some very, very surprising ones. There's at least, I'd say at least two in the top five which you would not think. Or one you may think, but one you'd definitely be like, wow, no.
It's just because on these tests you want to say people like BJ Penn and stuff like that, but then you've got to look at the fact is when they were fighting, they weren't getting paid. Like,
to be fair, there is some older fighters, but a lot of them are from the era of like when UFC really blew up.
Yeah. Well, on there then you've got to, if that's the case and really blew up. Yeah, why don't I not say first Brock Lesnar? He's got to be
Brock
on there.
Brock Lesnar's at number 10.
He's definitely got to be on there. Anderson Silva's
at number 4. 4.5 million. 5.4 million, sorry.
Do I feed on there? I'm going to say next. DC's going to have to be on there at some point because
Answer. Daniel Cormier's not on the list.
Oh, Ronda Rousey.
Ronda Rousey. She was actually not in the top 20. She was actually number 25.
Jesus.
I'll start giving you some. You've missed off some pretty big names, to be fair, yeah. A lot of these are heavyweights and light heavyweights because obviously they're the marquee divisions. There is a couple like lower weights.
Oh, one of them has got to be Alistair Overeem.
In fact, you know what? I'm going to take one off you because on the list here, Daniel Cormier is on the list. He's at number 8, so you've got to laugh back. He's earned 4.68 million.
I thought he would have earned that much for how much.
So did you just say Overeem?
Yeah, he's got to be on there.
Overeem's at 7.
That motherfucker's
been 4.71 million. So you've still got two and five that you haven't got yet.
Two and five. I'm going to say Arlovski. Because he's got to be.
Arlovski's at 12 with 3.92 million.
And is this current or people who's.
Well, when was the last time GSP fought? Oh, and you mentioned it.
No. Because I mean, like Josh Barnett. Like.
No, he's not on it. A lot of these fighters have retired, but they're also, like I said, they're from the era where UFC proper sprouted out. The number two is very, very close to home.
Oh, why did I say him? Bisping.
Bisping has earned 5.48 million.
He's worth over 10 million now. He's minted, is the guy.
Number five.
Sorry, Bisping.
I think I could give you 20 guesses alone and you would not pick it off. I am shocked that he is this high.
So you've got. So who have I said so far?
Well, the correct answers you've got are Conor McGregor, Bisping, GSP, Anderson Silva, that's the top four. Then you've got Donald Cerrone, Alistair Overeem, and Cormier at 6, 7, and 8. You haven't got 9 yet. You've got 10, which is Brock, 11, Bones, 12, which is Arlovski. So you've still got. 5, 9, and then 13 to 20.
Can I go with Chuck?
Chuck Liddell is at 18. He's earned 3.38 million.
Well, if that's the case, then both Tito Ortiz has got to be on that list.
Tito Ortiz is not on the list.
Is he not on the list? Shit. Because he had some trilogies with Ken Shamrock and stuff like that. So, and he came back, he had some fair big bouts.
Well, number 9, number 13, 14, 15 are all the same division, all from the same kind of like little era of fighting. Number 17, which we still haven't got, is an absolute legend. Number 18 is number 16 is a current champion. And then number 19 and 20 are lower down divisions, but absolute legends. And they both still fight now.
Oh, so one of them's a current champion. I got out of that, one of them's a current champion.
Yeah.
I've already said Bones, so he's already on the list. So a current champion for. I'm about to say one of them for some reason, but she's not a fucking champion, is she?
She's also not on the list.
Oh, I had it in my head, I thought to me, she fucking.
to meet Wei Li Zhang sort of thing. Well, if that's the case then. So Korea earn fighting purse in the UFC.
And one of them's a champion.
Right, I'm going to have to go Cejudo.
Nope, Cejudo's not one of them.
Right, well, think about it carefully then.
I'd go for the little group of fighters from the same division. Think of like the kind of like the boom period in UFC, where there was a lot of fighters all like in the same division, all like vying for the same big name fights. Just think about that kind of little group and who you basically, once you get one of them, you'll probably get at least three or four of them.
Oh, when you're speaking like that, then they actually boomed. When the UFC actually boomed, it was literally from Tough, when it was with Forrest Griffin and Stephen Bonner, when the UFC boomed up. So when you talk about that era, that's literally the era of Randy Couture and Chuck Liddell and
Chuck Liddell, you've already mentioned.
Yeah, I'm gonna throw him out there just because of how many bouts he had, and how long he's basically been fighting. Frankie Edgar.
Frankie Edgar's number 20.
Oh.
Just made the list of 3.34 million.
I think he's been in there fucking a hell of a lot. He's been in there with everyone, hasn't he? He's fucking fought everyone. I must have fucking only got a couple more now.
No, you've got quite a lot to go at. 5, 9, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17 and 19.
Jesus.
Like I said though, once you get one of these, like little group, you'll get at least a couple of them. I'll give you a clue, more of a clue. The group is the lightweight division. So all that big name fighters.
Beta Belfort.
Beta Belfort is number 9.
Bang.
He's earned 3.94 million.
Right then. That's the case then. Lyoto Machida.
Lyoto Machida is number 14 with 3.53 million.
Shogun.
Shogun is 15 with 3.50 million.
I thought he would have been in there. So you've got the three Brazilians, who was the basically terrors of that division.
And then there was also someone else who, if you remember, that title was like a hot potato, no one could keep hold of it.
I think the only person who Liddell defended it like twice before getting knocked out or something like that. No one could keep hold of that belt before basically Bones come along and just like, this is mine now, I'm taking it.
Yeah, but Bones take it off.
I already said Shogun.
Right, then who did... No, he didn't take the title off Shogun, he defended against Shogun.
No, he didn't. He took it off Shogun. Rashad Evans,
that's who he took it off.
No, he didn't. He took it off Shogun, they defended it against Rashad.
Yeah. Anyway, Rashad Evans is at number 13 with 3.55 million. So now you've got 5, which you won't get. I guarantee you won't get. You've got 16 and 17 and 19. 17 and 19 are legends, absolute legends. 17 is now retired, but 19 is still fighting. And if it wasn't for 19, number 1 wouldn't be who he is.
Oh, Chael Sonnen.
Nope, Chael Sonnen's not one. One more laugh. Right, 19, just think about who were number one.
Conor McGregor.
And what fighter basically made Conor McGregor? Made him the character that he is, made him the money fighter that he is.
So made him?
Yeah, I don't mean made him, like, what fighter did Conor McGregor go against that made him the big star, like the absolute money fighter?
Aldo.
Was it Aldo though?
Rivaldo, fighting one. Am I speaking about Alvarez?
No, he wasn't the money fighter now. This one.
Shit, why am I not fucking Nick Diaz?
Nate Diaz is at 19.
Fucking
3.37 million. So.
I thought I said him when I said McGregor. Why would I not fucking say it? Of course, he literally, after that one fight off McGregor, and then the second fight, he literally fucking jumped over like everyone, like. Literally make it. I think when I saw it, he was like literally down the bottom of the things. And after the first and second fight, he was fucking right up there.
The first fight, he was on $500,000 and $500,000 to win, and then the thing, the second fight was on like $1.5 million.
Yeah, it's fucking mental.
So you've got five, which is I'll have to give you a clue. It's a heavyweight, and then you've got 16, which is a heavyweight, and then you've got 17, which is a retired legend. So 5 and 16 are both heavyweights, and I've also said that there's a champion in there of what you haven't mentioned, so that might kind of give you a bit of a clue.
Right.
But you can't be a champion if you're a retired legend, because you're retired.
Yeah.
And the other two are heavyweights. So what's one of them?
Well, it's going to be Stipe.
Stipe is at 16.
Have I not said Stipe? When you edit this, look, listen back on that, because I'm sure I fucking said Stipe.
Stipe has had 3.46 million, so you've got a legend who you'll probably kick yourself when you hear his name, and then the other one you'll be like, how is he the fifth most well paid fighter in the UFC?
So but these are both heavyweights.
No. One of them has fought a heavyweight, but he's not naturally a heavyweight. He's actually fought at quite a few weights during his career, for quite a few different companies.
Please don't. I might get it wrong. I might get it wrong here. But is it gonna be one of them? Gonna be Rumble Johnson?
No.
Oh fuck's sake!
That's your life gone. You did well though. You still got 18 of them. Number 17, the legend is Dan Henderson.
Oh motherfucker! Yeah, he would have fucking got fed a fair bit. Yeah. Jesus Christ!
And the fifth place, I don't know how. Mark Hunt.
Mark Super Small Hunt, mate. Yeah, he's fucking fought in Pride. He's fought everywhere. No,
this is from people who's paid by the UFC.
Yeah, it's because before, a lot of people think, a lot of people remember Mark Hunt from 4 or 5 bouts ago. But one thing a lot of people forget about Mark Hunt is that when he came into when he basically came into the fucking, into the UFC, obviously he went on that losing spree, then he lost like 4 in a row, and the UFC basically tried to pay him to sort of disappear and get off the scene, and he's like, nah, fuck you, I'm fighting my contract out. That's when he started knocking people out and walking away. But before that, we're in Strikeforce, where he just fucking went on a tear and were just bodying people. So he got paid a fair bit, and that's why, I think that's, personally, that's why the feud between him and Dana White sort of like, started. Obviously the steroids and all that shit came afterwards, but I think it was more that Dana White, where they knew how much Markup were getting paid, and they were like, fucking take it piss now, like, we expected you to basically be like Brock Lesnar sort of thing, if you will, but like MMA, and he just did turn out to be in his first run, then in his second run he just fucking killed everybody.
Yeah, I think a lot of it's also because he had like 25 fights more in UFC alone, so.
Oh, that's it. In his actual bouts alone, he's the only guy who I can physically still remember to this day fighting the likes of Fedor, Krokop. The only guy I can remember who took a full blown head kick from Krokop in his prime and sort of not been knocked out on court. He got fucking knocked down, but he weren't in hospital, let's put it that way.
No,
got a hard head.
Definitely. So yeah, that's according to thestreet.com, that's the 20 most well paid UFC fighters. So yeah, thank you all for listening. Now you can follow me on Twitter at DJ Kirby, follow Carlos here at Kirby_Carlos, follow the show at 5 Rounds Pod. Yep, we'll be back next week with some more all killer no filler content, but until then, that is the end.
Adios amigos.
You are listening to the one and only Visionaries Wrestling Network, envisioning excellence and providing your perfect podcast experience.